said that Krishna's Virat Roop, it has a symbolic as well as a figurative as well as a literal meaning. So in India often we have books written about how everything is symbolic. So the question I have is, we read about Krishna killing Putana, and if afterwards we know what is the symbolic meaning behind Putana's killing, so is the literal meaning dependent on the symbolic meaning? It gives some higher dimension, or just if you know the literal thing, that's enough. So why do we go ahead and see the symbolic meaning also? If somebody is
it's not symbolic. Actually, every word is, words are symbolic. Are they not? Krishna performs his lila, and it is history. It is real. It is factual. But there's also lessons that he wants to teach us through the lilas that he performs. So they are both very significant. And that is why in the Acharya's purports, they explain how what we can learn and how we can benefit in our spiritual lives through understanding Krishna's pastimes. It's like the Acharyas explain that the various demons that come to Vrindavan, although they came, Krishna arranged it in such a way that each one represented, not symbolized, but represented various anartas that must all be killed by Krishna in our hearts. Sometimes when we say symbolic, we think that it's not true. So a better word is representation. That Krishna stages his pastimes in such a way that various essential truths are represented and revealed to us through his pastimes. What we could learn, how we could enrich our lives by seeing this. So we should perceive it as the Acharyas explain it, which means both. Side by side. It's like there's the Kurus and the Pandavas. They represent godlessness and godliness. There's Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad, the demons and the devotees. There's always the conflict between the demons and devotees. So in one sense it represents that fact. And it teaches, Prahlad Maharaj, all these stories teach us how a devotee deals with demoniac conditions of life. How he combats against the dark forces by always depending on Krishna and surrendering to Krishna. So therefore, we must first of all, as a prerequisite, as Vaishnavas, we must accept that the scriptures are factual. That they're not mythological stories simply to portray certain human virtues, as many impersonalists and mundane scholars comment. We must accept that Krishna's pastimes and the descriptions in the scriptures, unless they're specifically said that they're symbolic, we must accept them as fact. And all the previous acharyas have accepted them as fact. So that's first. But then, we want to go deeply into those facts to see how we, personally, in our own spiritual lives, can develop and benefit and learn and understand deeper what is Krishna consciousness through the deeper and deeper study of what Krishna has revealed. So it's not a question of symbolism or fact. It's a question of fact, but going deeply into it so that we can understand so many of the wonderful things that Krishna is trying to teach us through the exhibition of his pastimes. Because if his pastimes are ultimately yoga maya, they're all staged personally and directed by Krishna. Huh? They're not ordinary mundane affairs that Krishna intervenes into. And he stages these wonderful pastimes in such a way so that there's a deep and wonderful philosophy and way of life that's being revealed through them. Understand? Prabhupada condemned repeatedly the typical Mayavad example that Kurukshetra represents the body and the Pandavas represent the five senses. Because what they wanted to do is take the factual history of Krishna as the personality of Godhead and the Supreme Personality out of the teaching and just say that somebody has written these things just to symbolize the situation that we're all in this world and how to become enlightened in that situation. Therefore, there's no need to surrender to Krishna. You just understand the wonderful lessons of Bhagavad Gita. So therefore, Prabhupada very succinctly condemned this example. He said, no, Kurukshetra is a battlefield, and it's still present in this very day. In fact, Kardama Muni lived there for over a year. You can ask him all about it. Eyewitness. And the Pandavas lived, and Krishna lived, and the Kurus lived, and that battle is history. It's a fact. The place where Gita was spoken, Jyotisar, is still present. That's why these holy places are very important. Because they remain in this world especially to establish the historical fact of what took place there.
It's not wrong if you take it as a representation, but the literal meaning should be of first prominence. In other words, if you first accept that the Pandavas are there, the power took place, then there is no harm in it.
Very dangerous. What you're saying is very dangerous. When your spiritual master so adamantly condemns something, it's best to just leave it at that and not start meddling with it. Prabhupada could have said that. He repeatedly condemned this analogy. He obliterated this analogy because it was so misused. And he never once gave validity to that. So it's best to just leave it as that and not meddle with something that the previous acharyas so strongly dealt with in a specific way. Because it's confusing. It's confusing to devotees. If you read Prabhupada's lectures and read Prabhupada's books, and then you read that somebody's saying something the opposite, it's very confusing. It confuses the whole issue of what is parampara. You know what I'm saying? You could make that analogy. But when the previous acharyas so much condemn that analogy because of how it's misused, just let it be. What Prabhupada said is what he wanted said. He didn't want to give any credibility to that. Because as soon as you give an inch of credibility to that, then you give credibility to all the Mayavad philosophers who are misleading people. He didn't want to give any credibility to those people. He didn't want to give any room for devotees to say, well, he's saying the same thing as my Gurudev. Huh?
In the safe side, we should not use any analogies not given by the previous acharyas. That way.
I won't say like that. If the analogy specifically is accurate in a contemporary way to exactly reveal the same principle. But it's best, the best analogies, unless we're very highly realized souls, are the analogies of the previous acharyas, no doubt. When we're just preaching, we should definitely start using those analogies only. And then sometimes examples and analogies that are saying of exactly the same thing are revealed. That's not bad. But we shouldn't use analogies that our own guru has condemned and forbid us to use. And that's one analogy he specifically did. If you're sincere, you will honestly try to understand the revealed truth through Parampara. Doesn't mean you just take anything, accept anything, do anything, and think, if I'm sincere, Krishna will protect me. Just that doing anything, taking anything, accepting anything is a sign of insincerity. You have to be sincere. To be sincere isn't just some sentiment. It means it's the motivating force of what you're doing, what you're saying, what you're reading, what you're hearing, who you're looking for, what your motives are. If a person is sincere to find gold, he's not going to just buy it from anybody who says, I have gold. Person sincere to find gold, he will find out what the qualities of gold are, how to test it, and he will test it. If anyone just comes up and says, I have gold, and you say, well, I'll buy it from you because I'm sincere, I know it must be real. If you're sincere, you'll check it. You'll know how to check it. So if we're actually sincere about spiritual life, we will want to understand the proper process of finding a spiritual master, the proper process of approaching God. Who is God? So your sincerity is tested by your actions. Understand? But ultimately, if we're insincere, that means we have ulterior motives. Then even if you come in contact with the real thing, the real contact is not made. It's superficial. This temple is genuinely presenting the simple truths of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. But even insincere people can come here. But what will be the result? Even though they may hear and they may chant and they may meet the devotees and they may see the deities, that connection is not really made. They'll go away after some time. They may even stay for some time. But if they have ulterior motives in why they're here, then eventually Krishna will send them away because of that insincerity. to stay in Krishna consciousness, you have to be very sincere. You have to really be striving to transcend all the ulterior motives in your heart and in your mind. Otherwise, Krishna will remove you for some time. Brahmacharya ashram is growing. This year we have Sachi Sutta has come to join us. Everyone should give him your blessings. He can be a dedicated servant to the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gauranga has joined us just since I've been here last. Radhesham, Gauranga, Sachi Sutta, Mandara, Nimai Pandit, Stoka Krishna. You came just within the last 6 months, I think.
Steve.
But Steve's going. You can leave our temple, but you will never leave our hearts. We have you captured in our hearts. Cannot escape. So it's wonderful. Just since I've come here, so many wonderful devotees are dedicating their lives to Sri Radha Gopinath service. And Sudhakar is also coming?
Sudhakar, after he will come with him.
And Rohini Kumar may come also?
Yeah.
Huh? Raghupati may also? Paramhamsa, what is your plan? Acha, where is your home?
Madhya Pradesh.
You're going home tomorrow to talk with your parents. What will you talk with them? What is your hope? Yes, we will all hope for you.
Shilodhi is also planning to join us.
Brahmachari? Really? Blessings you have.
Welcome.
The rest is in your hands. You want to come live here? What are you doing now?
I'm working at State Bank of India.
State Bank of India. What is your service?
I stay in Kapuri and my branch is at Parmil, around 60 kilometers from here. What post? The clerical cadet. Clerical cadet.
So many bankers we have here. Shamanand was like a banker? Or something like that? Devamrit Prabhu? Vrindavan Maharaj. They have all discovered the best, safest place to deposit your wealth. is in the lotus feet of Krishna.
What is the value of those?
First of all, we have to, within our own mind, evaluate what is the motive behind this view. Is it service or is it for my convenience? And if we genuinely believe it's for service, to increase the service rendered, then we should present our views before either our guru or before one of his representatives, and we should humbly present our view in a detached way, and whether they accept it or reject it, we are willing to accept that. We should not be, we can present our views, we should never be attached to our views. Arjuna had his views. He presented it before his guru. His guru completely rejected it, and Arjuna accepted Krishna's view and rejected his own. So it's not wrong to present our views, but it's wrong to be attached to it. We're attached to accepting the authority coming down through disciple succession. And we are attached to service. Everyone is enthusiastic. Sankirtan? Yes? This is a wonderful Brahmacharya ashram. None of you could possibly understand the extent of special mercy that you're all receiving here. The nature is to take things for granted and be familiar. But I'm telling you that what you have here, you will not find anywhere else. This is not propaganda. I'm speaking very sincerely. You have such perfect, pure truth coming down through disciplic succession. Such a simple life. Such a pure format of devotional service. Such wonderful association. Exclusively with very serious people who want to give their lives completely. This Brahmacharya ashram has every single ingredient to bring about the perfection in all of your lives in the quickest possible manner if you just gratefully accept it and become a servant. It is very true. We really are inconceivably fortunate. And you will realize this good fortune to the degree you faithfully and humbly serve the principles of this ashram and respect all the devotees present.
the same.
What?
When we are not here in Bombay, in some other place, then we realize how much you miss this atmosphere.
Devamrit Prabhu and myself, we were realizing it for one full month. What a wonderful blessing it is to be with all of you. So you should all expect nothing for yourselves and offer your lives in the service of the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This should be the formula in which we live in this world. As brahmacharis, you have to truly seek the spirit of renunciation. And renunciation has various levels, primarily gross and subtle. The gross level of renunciation is that we should eat simple foods at regulated times and not too much. We should wear simple clothes in a simple way. We should be very honest and truthful, never duplicitous in our words or in our dealings. We should not speak unnecessarily things of this mundane world. We should always be discussing amongst ourselves Krishna's teachings, Krishna's pastimes, the lives of the great acharyas, and practical application of how to perform our devotional service to our spiritual master. Other than that, we should avoid gramya katha. We shouldn't hear rumors. We shouldn't hear or speak gossip. We should have very strict sadhana. We should chant our 16 rounds attentively every single day without fail while living in the ashram. We should attend the full morning program every day. We should not be attached to any material possessions. Either we should have nothing, or whatever Krishna gives us, we should understand it's only used and exclusively used for his loving service. We should not unnecessarily or freely mix with the opposite sex. These are principles of gross renunciation. And we should simply do anything we're asked at any time. This must be the standard. There should be no brahmachari living here that is not willing to do anything he's asked at any time. As soon as anybody says, no, I will not do it, that should be his ticket to leave the ashram. If a person is genuinely incapable or genuinely sick, then he can explain the situation. But other than that, when an authority, one of the authorities of the temple, asks us to do something, we must just accept it and do it. This is called obedience. This is called surrender. This is the principle of humility. We should have an ashram that is of this standard, that there's no service too high or too low for anyone. Tell me when the deities open. They're open now? Yes? It's my last chance to see the duties. You could all wait here if you like. They are on a final platform. Is to renounce the sense of false prestige, to offer all respects to others, to expect no honor for oneself. To genuinely try to please Guru and Krishna without personal expectations. To keep one's mind fixed in a mood of humility and service. This is the inner expression of real renunciation. And this is what Brahmacharya life is about. Renunciation. So many times we find Brahmacharis and Grihasthas, I mean Brahmacharis and Sannyasis, they become very proud of their position, of their commitment, of their dedication. This means they are not really renounced. Someone who is really renounced is really humble. So we want this quality to be available to anyone who comes to this temple. And it is available to the degree the brahmacharis living here are dedicating their lives to these principles of real renunciation, true renunciation. Simplicity, austerity, and humility. And we must strive in our own life, and we must strive to inspire these principles in the lives of all brahmacharis. And when grihasthas come to us, our humility should never be that we are better than you. If we're thinking we're better than anyone, we're not really renounced. We're still holding on to something. So we should be the humble servants of every devotee, whether they be sannyasis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, or other brahmacharis. We should be the humble servant of every devotee. We should never think we're better or superior. We should never expect respect from anyone. That is a transgression of real renunciation. But we should be anxious to give respect to every devotee. So if these principles are upheld within this ashram, the whole congregation will become wonderfully advanced in Krishna consciousness. And to have the opportunity to be living in this ashram and render this service to all Vaishnavas and to human society is really the greatest possible service. And those who take this service are really the most fortunate. The devotee is never proud of his good fortune. He's grateful for his good fortune. A devotee will never say that I have more fortune than you. I'm a brahmachari living in the ashram, and you're not, So I am more fortunate than you. That mentality is a sign of his misfortune. That although he has so much, he doesn't even understand what he has. We should know, yes, we're being given the greatest fortune. We shouldn't be proud that we have it. We should be grateful that it's been given to us. As undeserving and fallen as we are, Krishna is so merciful. The Vaishnavas are so merciful that they are allowing me to have such an inconceivable fortune, which I have no qualification to accept, but still they're giving it. This should be our consciousness. If you're proud, you cannot be grateful. And if you're truly grateful, you cannot be proud. Because grateful means, I don't deserve it, but you're giving it anyway. I owe you my life. Proud means, I deserve it, and I probably even deserve more. So how can you be grateful with that consciousness? Mercy is something that descends to someone who is undeserving. Unless we really feel ourselves undeserving, we cannot understand what is Krishna's mercy. If we think we deserve something, then we can't understand what is mercy. So this principle of humility, which of course you hear so much stressed, must be always stressed, because it's the backbone of it's the basis and the essence of everything else we do. With it, everything becomes wonderful in the eyes of God and in the eyes of Guru and in the eyes of the true Vaishnavas. And without it, nothing has any real significance spiritually. So let us all really, truly live by these principles. Be very strict. Be very, very submissive. This is the standard we want to live by. Nobody in our ashram is a specialist. Nobody's a pujari. Nobody's a translator of books. Nobody's a head cook. Everyone is a surrendered soul. First. And all of these other things are just the way we're being asked to surrender. Therefore, we accept it. If someone asks you, wash the floor, clean the pots, offer arti, and we say, I'm a book distributor. Or I'm the temple president. Or I'm a translator of shastras. Then the quality of whatever you're doing is nonsense. First principle is we are surrendered souls. One minute we may be preaching to 3,000 people giving pravachan. And the next minute we may be cleaning the toilets and rubbing the stool of all the children and all the other devotees. Which is higher? How can we differentiate? The highest thing is to surrender to humility. And we should be willing and grateful to do any service with a grateful and glad heart. This is the principle. You think about this for a few minutes, because I have to talk to somebody outside. Can you... Long time. Any questions about... And Srila Prabhupada said, quality will attract quality. If we want an ashram that will really attract people who are genuinely and sincerely seeking to give their lives to God, we have to be of that quality ourselves. If we have limitations in our willingness to surrender or ulterior motives, we will attract people of that consciousness. In pure theory and practice, a brahmachari is meant to be one of that standard. So my prayer to all of you is to take very, very special care of the deity worship. It should be first class of the highest standard. Every devotee who has second initiation should be willing, whenever asked, to offer aartis, to cook offerings, to dress the deities, to bathe the deities. Every devotee should be willing, whenever necessary, to help with the cooking, to help with the cleaning. The standard of deity worship should be absolutely clean, very punctual, and done with great care and attention, seeing Krishna as a person, as we have described in today's class. There should also be very respectful and loving relations amongst the brahmacharis. You should meet together. You should reveal your minds honestly, confidentially to one another. You should all try to serve each other very nicely. And you should all respect those who are senior to yourselves. And those who are senior should be very encouraging and compassionate to those who are just coming. And also we should very carefully, according to our capacity, study and learn these scriptures, especially Srila Prabhupada's books. And we should learn them, we should deeply try to understand them, and we should help to train one another to be able to present these truths exactly as they are being revealed by Srila Prabhupada's purports. Anyone who has that capacity, we want the devotees to be first-class preachers. First-class preacher means a first-class delivery boy, simply repeating the message of Guru and the previous acharyas, not taking any pride in what we say. You know, some of you work in banks. When you give someone money from the bank, you don't think, I am so merciful, I am giving you the money. The bank's giving the money. We just have the good fortune of being in the middle. So similarly, a preacher has to be of that consciousness. And we're not giving anything. Our guru is giving. And he's just using us as an instrument, as a puppet, to reveal his mercy, his divine grace, through his words to others. And we should be very considerate, very kind, very loving, and very friendly to everyone who comes to the temple, especially our own congregational devotees. We should befriend the grihastha men. We should carefully but very respectfully honor the women. And the guests who are not devotees, we should be very kind and treat them in such a way, with such loving hospitality, that they'll want to come back again and again and again. Every aspect of this ashram, where we live, where we eat, we should have a very high standard of cleanliness. Because cleanliness means conscientiousness. This means to be conscious that Krishna is everywhere. And he's accepting our service in whatever we do. So Prabhupada was very particular about this. One of the signs that a devotee is Krishna conscious is he takes very special care to keep everything clean, because he's conscious that it's for Krishna. So please take serious these principles. And always remember the wonderful verse of Mahaprabhu, that I am not a grihastha, vanaprastha, brahmachari or sannyasi. I'm not a brahman, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. But I am only aspiring to be the servant of the servant of the servant of Lord Sri Krishna. This should be the This should be the banner that we keep always held high in our individual lives and as our ashram in general. To be the servant of the servant of the servant. And I am especially eternally grateful to all of you for so wonderfully assisting in our humble service to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Because of your wonderful help in this regard, I really am eternally indebted to all of you. So consider me your servant. Any way, individually or collectively, I can help, you are all my life and soul. Please know that. I'm not just speaking this, but I am revealing what is strikingly manifested within my heart. And my sincere prayer at the lotus feet of Sri Radha Gopinath is that as soon as possible they liberate me from all of the responsibilities that I'm, if it is their desire, of course, and abroad, and allow me to come back and wholeheartedly serve your lotus feet as soon as possible. Rivo.